You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
Good morning, Tri-State. Welcome back to Radio Rehab. We are excited to be here every Saturday to talk about the different faces of addiction and sobriety recovery. I want to thank Alice Weathers and her team for the show before this show, where they approached the issue of substance abuse and addiction with our mothers during pregnancy and post-pregnancy. We really, really understand in this community that the drug and alcohol issue is killing the people we love. And we're glad to be here at Radio Rehab and all the shows WEOA has presented about substance abuse and those issues in our community. And you know what? You don't have to be addicted to drugs and alcohol for drugs and alcohol to hurt you. My guest today is a big wow. You all will be impressed. I always try to bring lots of different kinds of faces to talk to us about all the different approaches and experiences around drugs and alcohol. And one of the voices we need to hear more from are young people. We also need to hear more from parents. We do hear a lot about recovery from women and people in the 12-step meetings, but I think there's lots of other people that have a voice that can help us with this issue, as Marvelline Prince and Kelly Scroggins are trying to do, and Alice Weathers. We're trying to bring a lot of different voices in now, because it really is going to take a village. But my guest today is related to me, so that is a special place in my heart. This is my nephew, who is visiting from Dallas, Texas. He is a rock star. He's written a few songs. He's very creative and imaginative. Was raised by my brother. Just to survive that without drugs and alcohol is a miracle in itself. So anyway, I am very happy to invite him. He's a voice of young and expertise. He's had some of his own experiences, so I know that you will be excited as well to hear his story. And don't hesitate to call and ask questions, because again, nothing's below the belt at Radio Rehab. Just call us at 424-1400. Zach told me he's willing to answer any questions about anything. So I am going to try to wind myself down here and let him talk to you, tell you his story, and then we'll get into a conversation. Hey, Zach.
Hey, how are you doing?
I can't believe how much like me you look. You lucky guy.
We act a lot alike, too.
We are alike, I think.
Yeah, I think so, too.
So welcome to Evansville, Indiana, and thank you for taking time to be on the show today.
Thank you. Glad to do it.
Definitely.
Glad to do it.
It looks like you're okay with a microphone. It doesn't intimidate you. So.
No, my microphones really don't intimidate me too much. Just heights. Yeah.
Okay. Well, you are 19, so tell us just about you. You were, where you were born and raised, what that was like, what you think shaped you in life.
Okay. I was born and raised in Dallas, Texas, the Charlton Methodist Hospital, to be exact.
Wow.
Yeah, I went to private school my whole life. I switched schools a whole bunch. Probably went to 6 or 7 schools throughout my whole, you know, schooling part of my life. I got a brother named Jacob. We both go to Dallas Baptist University. He's the president over there. I got a mom. She's a drug and alcohol counselor. And then my dad, he has like 50 jobs, but he's a pastor, he's a reserve officer, he hosts a Messianic Jewish television show, he does a lot of stuff. But yeah, what kind of stuff do you want to know?
So you were in this family of super achievers, it sounds like.
Yeah, no kidding, family of super achievers.
Yeah, and you were the baby.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So did you know, young, what you wanted to do? Do you even know at this point, you think, at 19, what you want to do?
No, I always had a knack for business. When I was 13, I figured out eBay, and I would sell stuff on eBay, buy stuff in lots and sell them individually. I kind of had an idea of that when I was younger. So I always kind of was business-minded. But as I'm going through college now, I'm really trying to figure out how to take my skills and put them in the real world and, you know, into physical things, mm-hmm. You know, actual jobs.
Application.
Yeah, application, exactly.
So you know, you live hundreds of miles away from us here.
Yeah, that's fine. People are nice here, though.
It's
all,
very nice.
Yeah, it is. It's a lot like Dallas, you know, when you pass somebody, it's just, it's
friendly.
You just say, hey, when you pass them. It's not like New York or something where you see someone in passing and they're like, what are you talking to?
Yeah.
Like, but it's nice that you guys have, it's a very good environment. I love it down here, or up here.
Well, glad to have you in Evansville.
Well, thank you.
Sure. So at what age do you think young people start hearing messages about drugs? And do you think those messages are different with young people concerning drugs as opposed to concerning alcohol?
I think so. I remember my mom always told me by the time I was 13, I'd be offered to smoke a cigarette. And I was raised pretty conserved too. And I thought, you know, I didn't believe that at all. And sure enough, when I was 13 years old, right when I turned 13, someone asked me to smoke a cigarette. And, you know, a lot of the people around where I was at were doing it. And, I just had peer pressure and I just did it. You know, I just smoked a cigarette and it was kind of a big deal to me back then. I felt really bad about it. But, growing up, like I went to a public school in high school and all the kids talk about is drugs in my community. I don't know how that relates over here, but
yeah.
You hear about all sorts of different kinds of drugs and all the different appeal they have to them. I'm serious. Everything. These kids are like MDs. It's crazy.
Is that high school or junior high?
That was high school. In junior high, I didn't see too much of it personally.
Mainly
cigarettes. I also went to a private school. Had I been to, not saying private school has none of that either, but
right.
the one I was at, I think it's very under the radar, the kids that do.
So when you were offered a cigarette, was mm-hmm. that from an adult or another peer?
No, it was from another peer.
Your age?
Yeah, he was my age. Yep.
At school? Or
No. It was at this, we used to hang out at the Star Center. It was this ice skating rink thing. It was really sweet. And it was just outside there. We'd go hang out there every Friday when I was a kid. And
So do you think those
guys... And actually, all those guys actually like did a local signature. Like they burned the bud on their hand. Yeah, I still have mine. It's like somewhere right here.
Why?
I don't know.
What, just...
At the time, I didn't really think it would hurt too bad or didn't know that it would scar. Yeah.
So it's just other people were doing it.
Yeah, other people were doing it. Yeah.
So it makes you curious.
Yeah.
Do you think some young people are more curious than others?
I think absolutely.
I mean, especially to walk outside of the box.
Mm-hmm. Some people, I think, are too afraid to leave the box because they like their security. But I know if other people like me have very imaginative minds and are kind of curious what's out there, you know, as far as feeling good or feeling different or some stuff like that.
So you think young people that are more sensation-seeking personalities to begin with, maybe mm-hmm. a little rebellious, they're the ones more at risk for trying?
Yeah, I think so, too. And it's showed in other ways than drugs, too. I mean, I don't know. The law in Texas is if you have a red car and you're a guy, your insurance goes up if you're under 25. For a red car, right. Because the way they figure it is if you have an aggressive type of personality, you're the kind of guy that will get a bright red or it's also a bright yellow car. So they figure you're more prone to getting an accident. And the statistics say the same thing.
That is fascinating.
I mean, that's crazy.
Just by the colors?
I knew that because I tried to get a red car.
You were ready to get in the red?
Yeah, I was ready to sport a red car, and the insurance is like $60 more. Of course, I have a lot of speeding tickets, so my insurance isn't too good anyway. But
so
still,
you're kind of a live-on-the-edge kind of guy anyway.
Yeah, you can say that.
So how did that fit in with... my brother, the stern, stay-in-the-box kind of guy, and your mother and
well,
brother.
Well, my mom is pretty cool with it. I've been always open with my mom since I was younger, but I don't think my brother and my dad really understand my edgy side. My brother's not too edgy. He's real professional, you know, conservative, mm-hmm. and he never really got into any, you know, trouble or kind of did crazy stuff. But when I was a kid, we always did crazy stuff. I got in everything I could. BMX. We built our own dirt trails. We do crazy stuff. Break bones every now and then. Who cares?
Isn't it amazing how people from the same from the same parents can be so different? Like you and your brother and me and your father are opposite as night and day.
Yeah, it's interesting. The brain is it's crazy.
It's its own animal.
Yeah.
The brain is its own deal.
That's true.
So did you ever feel different because you were so unique compared to the rest of the members of your family, or did you embrace that part of yourself?
I actually always thought I was kind of different, kind of not from just my family. I kind of felt like I was different from everybody, not in a negative way, though, mm-hmm. but I always felt like there was something about me that was kind of different. Like, I kind of felt like I had a different outlook on the world, mm-hmm. a different take on, and I'm very opinionated.
And I have sensitive.
Right. I'm very opinionated. I'm very sensitive. I'm very emotional.
Yeah.
And I have opinions on everything. I always kind of thought I was a little different, but not in the way that's like, oh, I'm different.
Right.
Right. But kind of just
unique.
In a positive way. Right. Unique. Mm-hmm.
So do you think young people that are in that kind of...
Yeah, should guard themselves more.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. They're higher risk to begin with. Where do you go talk to people if you feel like something about you is just wired different than everyone else?
I got a couple of close buddies that I talk to.
Peers.
I don't really open up about stuff like that to people I just meet.
Right.
But yeah, I have had some good buddies since I was a kid that I talk to with that stuff. And my mom too, still.
Any other adults that embrace your individuality and your uniqueness?
I've had a couple teachers growing up that have noticed it, and I've talked to them, but I haven't really kept contact with them, you know. So
there were adults along the road,
right,
that recognized that and embraced it.
Mm-hmm.
So did you know when you picked up that cigarette the first time that you were doing something that was
dangerous? Oh, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's funny because, you know, when I first did that, it was a huge deal. And not only because I knew it was bad, but because I knew I was going against what my parents had told me. And at that age, I just... You know, once you break a rule the first time, it's a lot easier the next time and the next time. And you start losing that conscience. Like, my God, if I still had that conscience today, I would have never gotten in any trouble. If I would have still felt the same way I felt when I was a kid, that, oh, man, this is bad. Because eventually, you don't feel that at all.
At 13, you're
right.
Too curious.
Exactly. Because the more and more you break rules, you just start to not have a conscience.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just secondhand, and it's just boom, boom, boom. You're doing all this stuff, and you don't even think twice about it.
So you think for young people, when they do start going against the rules, so to speak, whether it's your parents or societies, they just kind of have to numb out to what honesty really is.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
You get your own rules, your own world.
I agree.
So lying changes our chemistry and our character.
Oh, yeah, it does. I mean, the first time you do it, it's you know, it's hard, and the next time it's easier and easier, and just like what we just talked about, it's just second nature after a while.
Kind of live a lie.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And then when you relate that to drugs, you just start lying to everybody. I know I did.
Yeah,
I was
except the other druggies.
Yeah.
then you're right in there with the brotherhood.
Yeah, that's true, though. But you just, oh, my gosh.
It's like
crazy.
Leading two lives, isn't it?
Yeah. In my case, it was like three with my, you know, DBU, kind of more Christian crowd than my family crowd. And then, you know, the drug crowd. It's kind of like three. And it's just like, geez.
Wow. Lots of different personalities for a young person.
Too many.
That's a lot of work.
Well, no.
Whoa.
You forget who you are sometimes.
I bet that's true. I bet that is so true. That's a good point. I never thought about that when young people have to start lying about something they do, they lose their identity.
Yeah, because if you have just a couple lies going around, I know this sounds like from a liar's point of view, but you can keep up with two lies, but when you have two lies and two more lies and two more lies, it's like a big branch that grows out. You can't keep track of all these lies, and you're going to get caught no matter what.
So what do? Just hide out?
Yeah, I hid
out. Did you, like, separate from your parents?
Yeah, when all my lies caught up from me, I just drove to Memphis.
Got out?
Yeah, I got a lot of stuff in my car, and I just drove. I thought I was going to New York, but from Texas to New York, no way. It's like a 28-hour drive.
Whoa. So kids that do end up living that lie want to run away eventually.
I think so. And I think some people get hit by it harder. Some people have really addictive personalities. And I've seen some people who have kind of got taken control of by drugs, but they managed to keep it at bay a little more than others. Right. With me, I have a very addictive personality. I mean, when I hit something hard. And, you know,
you sound like the people that I know and love and have grown up with in the 12-step meetings of AA and NA.
Oh, yeah.
That's kind of the personality most of us had, even before the addiction.
Yeah, and you can get addicted to anything, really. It doesn't have to be drugs.
No, for sure. Mm-hmm. I remember getting a call from your dad when you were 14 or 15 that you had hacked into the computer. at like a young 14. Age, you were already experimenting with electronics.
Yeah. Well, when I first started selling stuff on eBay, I mean, I guess I kind of got addicted to money. And, you know, when you're 14 years old, what do you buy with money anyway? I mean, I don't have a car. I'm not taking girls out on dates. So what do you really buy? I just wanted money. And I found a loophole to take kind of money from a big company, I guess, called PayPal. And I'd find money to take from them. And I would just buy random stuff like skateboards and shoes and T-shirts, and I'd have them shipped to a different address, and then I'd go and pick them up.
My God, and then, Zach, that's pretty sophisticated for a 14-year-old brain.
Yeah, no, yeah. Imagine what it would be like now. No, I'm just kidding.
God, for sure. Move over, Bill Gates.
Yeah, no, get out of here.
Zach Seif's coming.
Get out of here, Buffett.
So, yeah, So even at that age, getting into some of that actually not criminal mind, but that incredible curious compulsion to make money, even if it's a legal means. I'm sure you weren't thinking of it like that at 14, but your dad was a police officer too, wasn't he?
Yeah, they were going to come and get me out of high school when I was a freshman, and they were going to, because it happened when I was 14, but it took another year to catch up and build the case, and they're supposed to come get me with cuffs and drag me out of my school, which I thought would be sweet at the time.
Oh, God.
My dad picked me up. He told me he was doing me a favor by picking me up because the cops would have.
The parental line. This hurts me more than it hurts you.
I was like, geez, Dad, just might as well let the cops come. If I'm going down, let me go down awesome. Yeah. But no, he picked me up. We went straight to the PD, and then I got interrogated by some detectives, and I just lied and lied and lied. And I remember just sitting there with my arms crossed looking at him, just
angry.
Yeah, I was angry. And then my dad was watching from another room, and when he got out, he was just like, you know, I'm amazing at how well you can lie to these people. Like, that scares me. Mm-hmm. You're too good at that. Yeah, I was like, geez.
Something you're good at. That's not a good thing to learn that young, I guess.
No.
So what made you turn around after that? Did that get your attention? Do the cops coming to a young person, does that get their attention?
Yeah, it got my attention because they were telling me I might go to juvenile until I was 18. Because I would have been tried as a minor, absolutely. You know, I'm 14 years old. But still, though, it was pretty nasty. I got out of it. The judge told me that I'd be good and nothing would happen if I just could stay out of trouble until I turned 18, which I did. So.
You made that decision at that point, huh?
Right. It was more out of fear.
Yeah.
Is when I made that decision.
So fear might be a good thing.
Oh, fear's a great thing.
Yeah.
Keeps you on your toes, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
You got to fear some stuff.
Yes.
You got to fear the law, fear whatever.
Well, I know in our drug court, you know, our folks fear, they're afraid of the judge. And that's almost like a respect. The judge gets automatic respect. They're not afraid of anything else, but they're afraid of that judge.
Exactly, because the judge can send them right back to jail.
Exactly, and it works. So you're right. Fear can be a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Radio Rehab. We have an incredible conversation going on here with my teenage expert, Zach Seif, 19 years old, talking to us about some certain ways that teenagers think about things and how they shape their life. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
8-6-7-10. It's your last chance to save at Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville. Hurry in today for the July Savings Event Summer Specials. Sofas starting at $299, TV stands starting at $159, and queen beds starting at $299. Plus, get a free matching recliner with the purchase of a dual reclining sofa and love seat. At Ashley Furniture Home Store in Evansville, great style doesn't have to be expensive. So hurry in for these spectacular July savings. Sale ends Sunday at your Ashley Furniture Home Store, located on North Green River Road, south of Morgan Avenue in Evansville.
Listen up, Evansville. Did you know that Spuds and Stuff on the west side is the best place in town for a fast, filling, and just freaking awesome lunch? Spuds and Stuff has the food you crave. Over 30 different Titanic-sized taters piled high enough to please even the hungriest of the hungry, including the mouth-watering chicken and broccoli spud, a buttery baked potato covered in cheddar cheese sauce and topped with steamed broccoli, juicy grilled chicken, and bits of real bacon. Not in the mood for a baked potato? Try a traditional gyro pita or an an 8-inch Philly cheesesteak sub. Whatever your taste, Spuds and Stuff on Evansville's West Side has something great for you. So come on into Spuds and Stuff for lunch today. Baked potatoes, subs, pitas, salads, brownies, we have it all. It's easy to see why everyone loves Spuds and Stuff. So come dine in, call ahead for carryout, or get a freshly baked potato delivered to your door. See our full menu and order online at spudsandstuff.com. Located at 5225 Pearl Drive across from the West Side Walmart.
Merry Christmas!
Every Wednesday, the Tom Joyner Morning Show grants another Christmas wish.
Please, 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 Mr. Joyner, I keep praying that you see my letter and grant my Christmas wish because I really need it. Tamika, gotcha. Merry Christmas.
The Christmas wish happens every Wednesday morning on the TJMS.
It's Christmas once a week, baby, 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 on the Tom Joyner Morning Show.
This weather is sponsored by Spa City USA. Cool down with a Spa City pool. Price so low during our inventory reduction sale, you'll think we're giving them away. Call us in Evansville at 812-479-3161. Spa City, USA.
Nazarene Missionary Baptist Church Adult Drama Ministry presents Yet Holding On by Stanley Jackson Sr.
Oh, really? So you're going to give me a chance? You know what, Ricky? I'm going to pass. See, I'm not one of the girls you can just toss you any kind of way.
Saturday, July 31st, Bossy High School, 6 p.m., admission $5. Tickets available at Nazarene Missionary Baptist Church, 867 East Walnut Street, Evansville, Indiana, 424-7368.
Here's your forecast for 1400 AM, The Pump. For your Saturday, a mix of sun and clouds, probably starting out mostly sunny with clouds increasing through the PM hours. Blistering heat, high of 98. Heat indices for your Saturday could top out between 102 and 108. And then for your day on Sunday, starting out partly cloudy, but clouds increasing again. A 30% chance of showers and storms and a high reaching 92. I'm Fox 7 meteorologist Matt Madigan for 1400 AM, The Pump.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Warwick County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400. Or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
We are back, and thank you for listening. Don't forget, if you want to call, nothing's below the belt. We have an expert here today that's 19 years old, and he's talking about, as a young person, what shaped his life, some of the experiences that he got into that probably were pretty destructive for him, but it's his story. It's what's made him who he is today, and he's a fine young man, rock star, and he's related to me. So, Zach, thanks again for coming.
No problem.
We were talking about some of the things you got into. I thought it was interesting. You talked about being addicted to money. You talked about losing your identity and those kinds of things that can happen to young people. And I know once you went off to college, that sensation-seeking personality followed you.
Right.
Did you continue then smoking cigarettes? Did you get into any other drinking or drugging activities?
Well, actually, I never really started smoking cigarettes before I moved off to college. And then, one of my friends invited me to this, rave thing just randomly. And
what's a rave?
It's kind of like an all-night club, lots of lights, lots of dancing. Sometimes we would go out from, 10 at night to, 7 in the morning. They're after-hours clubs. It's, two different clubs.
And you're up all night?
Yeah, sometimes all weekend.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's called a rave?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're real popular in Dallas, Austin. They're all over the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of them. I don't know if there's any raves in Evansville.
Yeah, lots
right
of
now.
Drugs, lots of dancing, lots of lights.
Lots of drugs?
Oh, yeah.
So raves are known for drugs as well?
Oh, absolutely.
So
absolutely.
If kids go to raves, this is something parents might be needing to hear about. If your kid says he's going to a rave, should the parent assume that kid's going to get in some trouble?
Absolutely. There's nothing positive that comes out of a rave. Even if you go with the mindset of, I'm going to go here and have fun and not dance, why would you surround yourself with 90% of people who are, on different
substances?
Right. It's too much temptation, and it's just It's not just there.
It's all right. Over the place.
It's so available. They have debit. They have ATM machines inside. You can just take some money out, out $20, and just go buy some pills. No, I'm serious. And it's protected inside the clubs too. If you get caught, there's no legal trouble. They just throw you out and take your drugs, and they'll sell them back at the end of the night.
No way.
Oh yeah.
So who runs these raves?
There's in Dallas, there's a couple groups of guys that do, and you know, I've talked to them, and you know, because I've always wondered, how do the cops not get involved in this?
Yeah.
And one of them pays off city council, the big one. It's called Insomnia, about 2,000 kids every Saturday night.
No.
Oh, yeah. They pay
it's
off city council.
Insomnia?
Right, and then I talked to one of the cops there, and he was
That's
like...
That's a cool name for a club, Insomnia.
Yeah,
like
can't
that.
Sleep, Insomnia.
Yeah.
No kidding, we can't sleep, but...
So, what kind of drugs are going around the raves?
Oh, my goodness, different amphetamines, ecstasy, GHB, GBL, ketamine.
Jeez.
Yeah, a lot of uppers, and then there's some Xanax floating around, all
so
sorts of stuff.
So these kids know as much about pills as a pharmacist knows.
Yeah, they're little PhDs. I'm sure a couple of them can draw out the strands for them, too.
For God. So what's the age limit for a rave?
You need to be 17 to get in.
Okay, does it cost to get in a rave?
Yeah, it costs about $30.
My
Dallas.
God, and then you just are there all night?
Pretty much.
And how do they make money? Drinks?
Yeah, you can't serve alcohol at after-hours clubs.
But
because
you got all the drugs you need.
Exactly. It's very corrupt.
So when you started going to those, did you immediately get involved in taking ecstasy?
Well, my best friend invited me, and you know he'd been trying to get me to go for months. And I was like, all right, look, man, I'll go. But no funny business, you know. I didn't even know too much about these raves at the time. And, you know, I went there, and everyone else around me was doing it, and it just looked so bliss and carefree and fun. And
kind of a nice thing to see when you're a teenager struggling with all that teenage
right.
stuff. Wow,
yeah,
this looks just, like
it's,
fun.
It's like kind of like a different world inside of a world.
Sure.
And, you know, we got to this place, and there was just lights everywhere, cute girls dancing, and I was just like, what? A place like this exists? Like, I was just blown away. And then, yeah, I my first night there, I actually did it. I took ecstasy, and I was blown away. It was just crazy. I was just like, never seen anything like that before.
Is it
seemed
a pill?
Like carefree. Yeah, it's a pill.
And you just you took it.
Mm-hmm.
Not really.
I took
knowing
one. Not knowing what's in it. Not really knowing the effects of it. It was really stupid. Really immature.
So is that common? Young people take stuff they don't even know what it is.
Oh yeah, and some people go. I've known people that have dropped dead already because some people just keep taking it and taking it. I know somebody took like 15 pills
in a night.
Yeah, in a night.
Goodness.
Yeah, so many ER trips from different people, and it's just, no, what good comes out of that, you know?
Yeah.
Then it ruins your whole week, too, because you can't sleep for 2 days, and then your whole week, you're just kind of out of it, and then you finally collect yourself again, but then the weekend's already there, so you go out again.
So you immediately got into that lifestyle?
Yeah, the first time.
The taboo?
Yeah, it was crazy. It was like the only thing I could think about was going back like the next weekend. It was crazy. It was just like instant, you know.
In your blood.
Yeah, and there's no physical addiction to ecstasy. It's a psychological addiction. You just want that feeling again. It's not like my body needs it to function, but my body just wants it, you know. And so I found myself back there the next weekend, just started going downhill.
And was that when you were in college trying to do school at the same time and then this
yeah,
on the weekends?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Whoa, what a double life.
Yeah, no kidding, especially my university. Yeah, and the kids there knew something was up, too. They were like, man, you look out of it. You all right? And I was like, yeah, I just couldn't sleep or blah, blah, blah. So
when young people, again, for our audience, when young people go off to college and start in that kind of weekend lifestyle.
You can notice.
You can the parents or is it
oh yeah my parents knew something was up. Really everyone knew something was up. That's why I started withdrawing from my family, withdrawing from a lot of my college friends. You know, everyone knew what was up, and you have so much when you do drugs. There's so much shame and guilt
and anger
involved. Yeah,
defensive.
Oh yeah, I mean, my mom would ask if I'm all right, and I'd be like, yeah, I'm fine. What are you talking about? And just get real attitude with her.
So you immediately changed personalities.
Oh yeah, it was crazy. I was just wanting to party all the time because I never really partied much in high school.
You were pretty overprotected, yeah.
Well, not even that, no. Because I could have partied a lot in high school.
You could have?
Oh yeah, I went to a public school, and you know, there's a lot of parties going on, but it just really wasn't a desire of mine.
Yeah, you were always kind of liked being at home.
Yeah, it wasn't really intriguing.
Writing music and
yeah, it wasn't too intriguing to me until I was out there in the club and I was just like, oh my god, maybe I think that's why it caught up to me so much because I never really experienced it before. It just clicked,
At 19, or
I was 18 at the time. Yeah.
So. What's happened through all that? Did you eventually come out of hiding and ask somebody to help you, or did you get caught? Or,
well, I kind of felt like I cured myself. It all caught up to me because I was starting to fail in school, and I knew I had to drop out of my classes, and I knew my parents knew something was up, and then at the same time, I wanted to get away from all these club people, so I just took all my stuff in my car. Took like $1,000 out of the bank and just started driving into Memphis. Stopped in Little Rock for a night, but I couldn't sleep, man. Mm-hmm. And then I just drove into Memphis in the morning. I was like a little tourist. I went to the little information booth, did some sightseeing in the town. And then
did anybody know where you were, or was this kind of a
No, I remember calling my mom. I was driving into Memphis at 7 in the morning, and she called me. I was just talked to her, had a conversation with her. And I knew, and then I was kind of there, kind of detoxing myself in a way in my mind, and had to think of everything clearly. And then I remember one thought hit me. I was thinking, if I can't be honest, with myself, then how am I ever going to be honest with my wife, with my kids, with my parents? And so I kind of wised up a little bit, and then 4 days later I drove home through the night, and I just got there in the morning. I just told my parents pretty much everything,
my whole story.
Middle-ish, end of February.
Was that when they called me about a rehab?
Yeah,
no,
but I didn't.
It was March they called me about a rehab for you because I'd gone to my friends in Florida.
Oh, yeah. It was a big mess, though, because when I got back home, like, once you tell them stuff like that, it's like everything you do is a red alert, But you kind of bring that on yourself.
Sure.
Your parents
get scared.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then they want to know everything.
Plus, right, like if I miss a phone call. They freak out and they immediately think, and it's all because of my actions again, but they immediately think I'm out screwing around or doing whatever.
Yeah, your dad called me. I think I was actually, I was at my friend's in Florida when he called and said that he went looking for you at work and you weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
He was upset.
Yeah.
You're right. Any little thing.
Exactly.
The parents get freaked out.
Mm-hmm.
And like you said, understandably so.
Yeah. I mean, it makes sense, too, but I don't know. I kind of looked at it as I moved back home on my own will, and if I wanted to be out doing that stuff, I could easily do it. I had friends I could stay with and get a job or whatever, but I was coming back home because I was trying to clean up and, get ready for school in the fall.
And good for you, because I know that's where you're headed and that's your goal.
Thank you.
What do you think parents should do if they start to see a change in their kid's personality?
I think you need to confront them. I think a lot of parents, that's kind of a hard question. I haven't put too much thought into it. I think you should come at them with honestly, I'm not really too sure, Lisa. I don't have any kids yet. But
should parents, because some parents have such a special relationship with their kids. Their kids tell them everything they do, all the drinking, all the drugging. And then there's other parents that the kids are afraid to tell them anything.
It's kind of hard because, if you start just punishing people off the bat and saying, no, you're staying home, probably makes kids just want to go out even
more. Defiant, yeah.
Exactly. I think maybe you should just talk to your kids like they're your friends. Just kind of sit down and talk to them and, why are you doing this stuff? Do you really know what it does to you? Are these really your friends? Look around,
So you think, especially at college age, parents should approach
right, because college age kids are going to do what they want regardless.
So parents should be more friendly in their approach if you're in college. What if at 13 they'd have approached you about smoking cigarettes? How should they have approached you?
Oh, they should have approached me way more of a parenting, more punishment, grounding maybe. But
I have a friend that's the executive director of Youth First here, mm-hmm. Perry Black. She had a friend that lived in Tennessee that's 14-year-old son started smoking pot.
Mm-hmm.
And she just blew it off. Not blew it off. She was very concerned, confronted him, talked to him about it, but really thought, all kids are smoking pot. 3 years later, the son is dead. because he got into harder drugs. And now she's on this campaign nationally, almost like Mothers Against Drunk Drivers, that parents need to pay attention if their kids start using illegal drugs immediately. Just don't think, oh, all kids are doing it.
That's true. And on that note, though, I don't believe if a kid, let's say I was raised by the best two parents in the world, and I grew up and I kind of went astray. You can't put all the blame of that on the parents. There's so many variables in a kid's life, all the relationships he had, all the different talks he's had to people, the way he socializes and people socialize with him. There's so many variables that can affect a kid's decision. I don't think you can put that solely on the parents.
No, and I agree with you totally.
I had to learn a lot of stuff myself. I mean,
right.
I think I was my best teacher because, I mean, not to sound, cocky or anything, but I kind of felt like I cured myself in a way. Just so much thought of my own and learning from my own mistakes. I realized on my own how dumb this is, where I'll be if I keep doing it. See all these different friends going to jail. I have a friend, he used to be my roommate at DBU. He's doing years and years and years in jail right now.
So you just looked around and said, this is not what I want.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was hard to stop at first. But then
you had that strong mindset, that Sife mindset.
Yeah, that
too,
Sife
that,
mindset.
Hey, I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah, pretty much.
But back to the parenting real quick, then we have to take a break. Yeah, I don't think it's the parents' fault. She's just saying don't ignore it anymore.
Right.
It's just a typical teenage thing if you find out your kid's smoking pot.
Yeah, I would agree with that too.
That's more her plea.
You know, that makes sense, too. I would never ignore it as a parent. I just wouldn't necessarily beat myself up, and
right, no,
which I think a lot of people do.
I think you're right, especially parents.
Yeah.
It's hard to raise your parents.
Yeah.
Especially when you have Jeff Sife as a dad.
Oh, yeah.
How do you raise Jeff Sife? I tried for years.
Yeah, you don't.
Yeah,
Jeff Sife raises himself.
That's right. Well, we are soon going into another break. Before we do, we just have a couple minutes, Zach. If you could look back and change anything now about any of the choices you've made up to this point in your life, what would they be? What would you do different?
I would have never went to that. I wish I just had the wisdom I had now, and I just would have never went to that club, period. Stayed in school, wouldn't have had to take a semester off, wouldn't have to worry about all the other problems associated with the drugs. Because, I mean, once you stop the drugs, I mean, that's great and everything, but there's effects that linger on after.
Definitely.
It's not just like, pixie dust falls on you and you're into your old mind state. No, these things take a toll on your brain, and it takes a while for the neurons to grow back and everything to get back in order psychologically. And I just feel like it's like 8 months of my life just kind of hacked away with an axe.
Jeez.
But, I learned from it, and I'm a lot stronger from it now.
Yeah.
And I think it gives me a wisdom and a better perception of the world. I kind of see things what they are a little more.
Definitely.
Instead of being so ignorant and bliss.
In your little box.
Yeah, instead of my little box. My little
well,
side
you
box.
Well, you just said something that's very interesting, too, that we need to remember as a community and caring friends, that just because somebody stops, that doesn't mean it's the end.
Right.
There's lots of other consequences that take a while after they stop.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting point. Don't go away, Radio Rehab. We're talking to Zach Sife this afternoon about drugs, alcohol, parents, peers, clubs, everything a 19-year-old has to think about. We'll be right back.
McDonald's new real fruit smoothies from McCafe have such a spectacular burst of real fruit, they deserve a special intro.
Here it is, the strawberry banana bonanza. Behold the wildberry frenzy. And the grand finale, the explosive price of a small $2.29. Try McDonald's new real fruit smoothies from McCafe. The simple joy of a real fruit smoothie. Prices and participation may vary.
What you're hearing is a song I wrote about morning. It could be the best song about morning
ever. It focuses largely on breakfast at McDonald's because that's the most important part of the morning.
Well, the whole day, really.
It gets me going, like really going.
I have to admit, I didn't spend very much time on this song. I was kind of busy eating breakfast
at McDonald's.
Give yourself something to sing about with a hot, delicious big breakfast platter from McDonald's for just $2.99. Add 3 hotcakes for a dollar more. For a limited time, prices and participation may vary. Most McDonald's open at 5 a.m.
Feels like time's running out. You're maxed out on your credit cards. The collection calls are coming every day, and you're 2 payments behind on your mortgage. It seems like every time you turn on the radio, some cheerful couple's telling you how they got out of debt for pennies on the dollar. No more stress and everything is just wonderful. Come on. The truth is that what sounds too good to be true is too good to be true. You need help and you need it now. Not bankruptcy. That should be your last choice. We're Credit Card Relief, and we've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. We're the attorney-driven program dedicated to helping you get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving you thousands, and without risking your family home. We know what we're doing, and we don't make promises we can't keep. Call Credit Card Relief right now at 866-580-9999. 866-580-9999. The consultation is free and the relief is real. 866-580-9999.
A 30-second lecture with DeVry University English professor, Dr. Bill Hayes.
The word college comes from the Latin collegium, meaning to gather together. In our five specialized colleges of study, we've gathered together bachelor's degree programs in in-demand fields like health sciences, multimedia design, and business. Five colleges, one focus, your career success.
DeVry University, 90 locations and online. Discover education working at devry.edu.
When people are bothered, they'll say, "Don't bug me." But what do bugs say when they're bothered? That's something we may never know. But one thing we do know is that Walmart has what you need to have bugs stop bugging you. Get 1 gallon of Spectracide Bug Stop Insect Killer and Triazicide 10-pound Insect Killer Granules at Walmart's everyday low price. They're all available in the outdoor living area. So get the most out of your backyard. And don't forget, we'd hate to have to bug you. Save money, live better. Walmart.
You're listening to Radio Rehab, the most informative substance abuse program on the airways. Your host is Lisa Seif, who's the director of the Ward County Court Substance Abuse Program. You can pick up the phone right now and give Lisa a call at 812-424-1400, or if you're outside of Evansville, it's 1-888-846-7867. Radio Rehab. And now, here's Lisa Seif.
To this informative interview with Zach Seif, who's really speaking as an expert from a 19-year-old world on the things we need to know and talk about with our young people. Zach, while we were at break, we were talking about the role of religion, and I know your father, since he's my brother, is extremely religious,
right?
And that God has always been at the center of everything he and your mother do. Do you think that has had an effect on you?
Somewhat. I think the way I was raised, though, it was kind of spoon-fed to me. It's almost like I didn't have a choice. Like, if I were to break out and say, and start, you know, questioning things openly and not committing myself as a Christian, it would have caused some controversy, having my dad be a pastor. You know, with the youth pastor in the church, I couldn't feel like I could be directly open with him, you know, for fear that, and he actually did this. I remember I told him about a legitimate issue, and he just went and told my dad, and then I just got stubborn. I was like, you know, forget this. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I think religion is also a track you need to figure out on your own.
Yes. That's what I love about the 12-step programs. We, each of us that are members of those, can pick our own higher power.
Right.
So, you know, your brother was raised Jewish. You were bar mitzvahed. I was at your bar mitzvah.
That's right.
You were there talking about Moses and leadership. So I know you've had a lot of the Judo-Christian seeds planted in your brain.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think any of that, even though it was spoon-fed and forced to you, shaped the way you saw the world?
Yeah, I think it did a little bit. It wasn't until I was really older that I really started, I'm not even that old right now, but, you know, when I turned 18, I started really thinking about it. And, you know, I'm still a little confused myself, but, you know, you look around the world and you know how amazing the brain works, how gravity works, how the atmosphere is, the food chain, this animal is the animal, and it just goes around in a circle, how complex everything is. Mm-hmm. Seems like it needs a creator.
Yes.
It's not just a big explosion that happened and click,
right,
here we are. Like, it's too perfect.
Yes.
You know, it doesn't make sense for something like this to just happen.
Yeah.
That seems like a non-reality.
Right.
But I think that's just on everybody to figure out on their own. No one can make you figure something out.
So you think religion has a role in your life?
Absolutely.
But you have to be...
You got to believe in something.
You have to be able to figure it out for yourself.
Exactly. Even atheists believe in something. They believe in nothing.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, you gotta, you gotta believe in something.
So being a minister's son,
mm-hmm.
being told almost what is right and what to believe, do you think that might have played into some of your rebellion as well?
A little bit. I've always questioned things. Like, I remember when I was little, I always wondered why babies in some church, when they're born, they would be baptized. And I'd always think, you know, like, this doesn't make sense. Are these babies choosing what lifestyle they're going to live? Like,
yeah.
You know. And I always kind of questioned authority. I wasn't really complacent. I always, you know, had a say against something, whether I'd agreed with somebody or was against somebody.
Mm-hmm.
In my mind, and I was pretty outspoken too. I always had an opinion, so I always challenged authority and challenged what people would tell me. And I guess that led to it.
That's a great personality.
Yeah, people challenge God all the time in the Bible.
Yeah, oh, for sure.
I mean, Job in the Bible, I mean, he questioned God.
Yes.
He's like, what are you doing? Like, and you know, God.
Why are you, yeah.
Yeah.
So at Dallas Baptist University, are you allowed to have your own opinions and impressions, or is that more of the same of somebody telling you what
it's
to believe?
More the same of what somebody telling me what to believe. If I were to walk around the campus and, you know, tell people that I'm not a Christian, I would be judged by all sorts of people. And, you know, that's also some of the problem, I think, is a lot of people seem so self-righteous. And I think it scares people away from religions, not just in Christianity, but in other religions. They're so just set on themselves sometimes.
Their ways
that I'm right, you're wrong, I'm going to heaven, you're going to hell. And it just scares people off. I mean, that's not what anything's about anyway.
You know, Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, said nothing will scare a newcomer out of these rooms quicker than spiritual arrogance.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Wow, I never heard that before, but that's on the ball.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, you were given all those kind of what looks like the right things
mm-hmm.
for a young person. You know, religion, a good education, being provided and taken care of.
Mm-hmm.
So you're proof that even given all of that, and a lot of people that I've met just in this show were given all of that, but still ended up in raves, taking dope,
smoking crack. It takes 3 seconds to make a decision that you worked 18 years for, you know.
Mm.
Just think about it. It's just the action of just putting a pill in your mouth, boom.
3 seconds.
Maybe less than that. I don't know. However long it takes to get from your hand to your mouth.
Yeah.
But point is, it's just a quick decision, just snap of the finger.
So for us to protect young people and to protect ourselves, and we need to learn a lot from you young people, we need to constantly be aware that
mm-hmm.
they have major decisions to make every second.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that there's certain places, if they go, they're going to end up in trouble.
Yeah, absolutely. It's just, you surround yourself with something. It's a hard concept, but, you know, you really are who you hang around with.
Yes.
I was, when my dad told me that, and that made me so mad when I was a kid. I thought it was the dumbest thing I've ever heard, but it's really smart because, I mean, you look around, you know, you see all these doctors. Who do they hang out with? Other doctors. You know, of course, there's exceptions for every rule.
No, but like-minded people usually hang out with like-minded people.
Yeah, I mean, that's true. When I was doing drugs, you know, I guess I wasn't hanging around with, you know, deacons in my church. I was,
no.
I was, you know, hanging out with other people who did it. So,
yes. Is it hard, then, to let go of the people, too, when you get clean and sober?
Yeah, for some people harder than others. For some people harder than others because they're always going to be there inviting you to come back and blah, blah, blah. But you just got to realize, you know, if these people really care about you and your safety, why would they do that anyway?
Mm-hmm.
You seem to block it off in your brain and just learn to not answer the phone calls and just separate yourself.
It sounds like you really snapped out of your bad deal quickly.
Yeah, it's kind of like a dream. It all went by so fast, yeah, it's kind of like a dream, different memories, yikes.
Yeah. So what do you see ahead as your big challenge?
As far as...
It's staying on this course.
Well, you know, I learned that you're never going to get in trouble if you don't put yourself in places where you can, you know. I'm never going to be even tempted to do any of that stuff. I know now, I would never. I mean, after my experience, I would never, ever think of taking another drug, but... More so than that, if I'm not around people who are doing it or I'm not around a place where it's happening, then there's no way that it would happen, period. You know, if I'm not going to a rave, I'm not going to be tempted, even though I don't feel like I'm tempted now, but that kind of justifies it.
So you're pretty convinced at this point that your willpower and your attitude power are enough.
For me, yes. For what I did, yes.
Yeah.
For other people, it might be different. You know,
sure.
Everyone's different. But
sure.
For me, I think so.
And I think you're a good example that you don't have to be addicted to drugs for drugs to hurt you.
Yeah.
You were sure on your way.
Yeah. Yep.
So was ecstasy your drug of choice, if you had to put drug of choice on there?
Yeah. I'd say so.
Hallucinogens?
Yeah, ecstasy wasn't too hard of a hallucinogen, but some of the pills cut with the ketamine and stuff, mm-hmm. They're really funky. Yeah, those things are crazy.
So we really need to...
And you never know what's in them anyway.
Yeah.
It's not like you, can look at it.
You can't tell what's really in it.
No, yeah, these aren't RX pills. I mean, they're not from Albertson's Pharmacy. I mean, these are synthetic designer drugs made in a lab by some guy. You know, you have no idea.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, what do you trust?
I can't believe looking across at you, you're my nephew, my blood, and what wisdom you already have at 19 years old.
Well, thank you, Lisa.
What do you think we need to do, you, the young and the old, in partnering together to help make this a safer place for other people?
I think you just need to get it across to kids' minds how dumb this is, because it's just so acceptable to them. You know, when I first went there, it was just so carefree, and there's no worries, and there's no consequence, but, I mean...
And that looks so appealing to a young
exactly,
person.
But you just gotta really talk to him and really just show him the facts and just... And it's really hard for a kid, and that's, like I said, the best way I learn is by experience. But with other kids, I mean, I think everyone's going to have their own journey, but I think you just really need to make them aware of just how ridiculous it is.
Yeah, I've always said we need to do more, even in our schools, about the history of drugs in America, in chemistry classes, the different drugs that are out there and what are in them. Because I think most young people are smart enough, if they learn ahead of time, they may not put that into their body or their brain.
Right.
Who's heard of ecstasy? Unless you're at a rave.
Right.
So...
Maybe that's true.
You're right. We need to just keep teaching.
Yeah.
Educating.
Yeah, and some people, you know, are more susceptible to that, and the other ones are kind of more rebellious like I am. But, I mean, people are going to do what they want to do at the end of the day, but I think you just need to just kind of... I think if I was more aware, you know, if I could just see what would have happened beforehand, I wouldn't talk twice about it.
Right.
You know, but fortunately, that's not the case.
Yeah. Well, thank you for coming on. Thank you for visiting Evansville, Indiana. You're awesome.
Well, thank you, Lisa. Glad to be here.
19. Look at you.
I know. Look at me.
And look, if you want to hear Zach on his YouTubes and on all of his shows, you can Google or YouTube Zach Seif, Z-A-C, and then S-E-I-F, and you'll hear all of his songs.
Thank you.
You have some incredible songs. Are you going to do more with your music and writing? And
Who knows? I'm not really too sure. I'm always writing music, but you know, we'll see what happens. I've already had some really sweet opportunities.
I know.
And hopefully there's some more of those.
Love those songs. Love that you're here.
Thanks
for being so candid and open, so authentic.
My pleasure.
Thank you for coming.
No problem, Lisa.
Anything you want to say in closing?
I don't know. You guys have a sweet city.
Thank you. We love our city. That's great. Come back. And
really nice people here.
Yes. And play guitar more for us here in Evansville.
You got it.
All right, honey. Everybody, thank you for listening. If you want to hear Zach, he'll be on the World Wide Web, LisaSeifCares.net, or you can Facebook him at Radio Rehab, or you can call the radio station here. Anything you want to know but are afraid to ask, we will get the answers to you. And we have Zach here, and I'm sure I can get him to answer any of your questions, if you have any, from a 19-year-old's perspective. Thanks for tuning in today, all my friends and all the friends in Evansville in recovery, and parents and teachers and ministers that are praying still for those out there still suffering. We're glad you tuned in. Hope you learned something today. And don't forget, between now and next Saturday, to do the next right thing.
WEOA, Evansville Henderson.